Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. William Bickerton actually lost control of his own church. How did that happen? Dr. Daniel Stone will talk about the events that led to some people to oust William Bickerton as leader of the church. It started a schism in the Bickertonite church. Check out our conversation. I'd also like to remind you to please subscribe to our podcast. For $10 a month, I will send you a copy of our transcript here with Dr. Daniel Stone, as well as all future transcripts if you'll subscribe on our website for just $10 a month. Also, you could also subscribe on our Patreon page for just $5 a month to hear the entire interview uncut. Please subscribe. It'll really help us out and keep the podcast alive. Now back to our conversation. So William Cadman, that's a very important figure from this point forward, isn't it?
Yes, it is, from this point forward.
Let's talk a little bit about him.
Okay, so William Cadman is the president of the Quorum of 12 Apostles and was a very good friend of William Bickerton. During all this issues that was happening within Zion Valley, and there was a lot of debate, there was this other guy, William McDonald, that went out there and sold all the livestock. I mean, they eventually get kicked out of the church because, you know, eventually people kind of come around to William Bickerton's line of thinking because of William Cadman. William Cadman has this revelation along with several others during a meeting in the East and basically says, no, we need to be supporting them. So William Cadman was really a believer of William Bickerton. He gets converted into the Bickertonite movement in 1856. His story is really interesting. He is an English immigrant as well, and according to his account, he saved on a ship. He was supposed to get on a ship to cross over to America. And when they get on the ship, him and his wife Elizabeth, they say that they're freaked out. They said something major came over them and they had to get off the ship. And then they eventually get on another ship to go to America. Well, when they reached the shores of America, they said that there was a really bad storm, so they had to stay on shore for a few days. And he gets a newspaper after the storm is upset, and he realizes that that ship that went before them, that sunk into the ocean and everybody died.
Wow.
So he said he feels that God had spared him. And then they get on a train to get to the Pittsburgh area. Eventually they're going to move there. And they say that while they're at one of the stops on this train route, they say that a train car comes crashing into the waiting room, and he had actually fallen asleep before this train car crashes, and his wife was wondering, where's my husband? And she goes into the other room to find her husband, and according to his account, it says that she was shaking him, trying to wake him up, and he just, like, smacking him, and he wouldn't wake up. And as this is happening, that's when the train car crashes into the room where she was. So he feels that that was another divine rescue, and then eventually he meets the Bickertonite church, and that's where he feels. He flat out says, like, I never would have thought I would have converted to Mormonism or this line of Mormonism, and here I am converting to it.
Wow.
So he was very devout. He was very devout of a support for William Bickerton during Zion Valley. But you start to see William Cadman kind of get he was always an independent thinker. And that really was a quality that people liked about William Cadman. He was very brash. He was very stubborn. He had a lot of those qualities and traits. He was very sarcastic at times. But those were qualities that kind of really made him a powerful figure within the Bickertonite church. Well, what ends up happening is while in Zion Valley, William Bickerton and they're going out preaching to the Native Americans, William Bickerton becomes friends with this woman named Tryphena Taylor. And it appears, according to William Bickerton's account, one of the newspapers, there was two miraculous healings under Tryphena. She was on her deathbed. She's this young woman in her 20s. She's married, and she has children, and she's on her deathbed, and all these people are in her home, and she's basically, in her weakest moments, basically telling people goodbye, and she's very briefly kind of trying to help, say, well, this is what to do with the children. She thinks she's going to die, and Bickerton's there. And he's really distraught. He goes to the creek to pray. And in this moment, when he's at the creek, he feels in his spirit, go back there and tell her she's healed. So he goes into the room very boldly and says, do you believe that Jesus can heal you? And she says, yes. And he says, well, in the name of Jesus Christ, get up. And according to the account, it says that she got up instantaneously. It was healed off of her deathbed. And then there was another instance where one of her children were healed under the hands of Bickerton. So you start to see that there was a friendship there. There was a kinship. And William Bickerton was very close friends, not only with Tryphena, but James, her husband. And Bickerton at this time is in his 60s. She's in her late 20s. And there, all of a sudden, there's this snafu within their relationship. And we don't know all the details, but James Taylor basically says, you are having an affair or having some type of illicit relationship with my wife, and blames his wife as well and says, both of you are doing something here. And this is in 1879. They have a council meeting. You know, Bickerton is brought forward, you know, as the prophet and leader, he still has to go before councils, kind of like Joseph Smith had to do. It's very democratic in a lot of senses and has to discuss it. Well, both Bickerton and Tryphena are like, we're not having an affair. And then according to the minutes, it just says, well, everything was reconciled. Everything was good to go. But then, not too long after that, William Bickerton says, well, I got to do a missionary effort, and I'm going to go to all the saints in Kansas just to kind of see if they're dedicated to really have a final push to go to the Native Americans, really have an effort. Well, he invites James and Tryphena on this trip again, thinking everything's okay. James is even prophesying on this trip that William Bickerton's a prophet of God, and you see this friendship developing. Well, after this trip, at some point again in 1880, James again gets jealous and says, no, you're having an affair. You are now, there's an affair happening here. And it explodes. Not only within the Bickertonite community, but within the town of St. John. Because remember, there just weren't Bickertonites living there. There were regular Americans living there. And William Bickerton was, this is what makes him an interesting Mormon too. People liked the Bickertonites. I mean, there was a couple detractors that might write little sarcastic things in the newspapers, but for the most part, they got along with everybody. Nobody. So William Bickerton was a respected person, and now he's kind of like the patriarch of this community. He was the one that helped establish it. People like him.
So he didn't do a lot of block voting.
Yeah. But you know, even when they created the town of St. John, there were Bickertonites and Gentile Americans that were all part of the board.
It seems like there was just a lot of block voting problems in Missouri. You
know? Yeah, exactly. So they didn't really have that problem. Some people didn't like that that St. John eventually becomes the county seat of Kansas. There's some jealousy there, and they kind of blame the Bickertonites for block voting a little bit, but nothing major, because obviously there were regular Gentile Americans that were there a part of it as well. So it's just more or less jealousy rather than like, oh man, we wanted the county seat, now you guys got it. But yeah, so what ends up happening is this blows up with the adultery allegation, and people start hearing about it. And this is all that's happening during this time that they were prepping for this great big conference that was going to happen in 1880 in St. John. And it was a lot of people from the East were going to come to Kansas, and they were going to show off the city, show off the launching point to the Native Americans, talk about their progress. And this adultery scandal blows up. So William Cadman eventually comes as part of the conference. And for one reason or another, the documentation doesn't show. William Cadman was always an ardent supporter of William Bickerton, but all of a sudden he changes. And there's several reasons why. William Cadman, around this time in 1879, starts to have different ideas about how the millennium or Zion is going to develop, which is different from Bickerton. As the president of the 12, he's kind of disagreeing with Bickerton on eschatological beliefs. Like, for instance, William Bickerton, we talked about, believes that the Civil War was this cataclysmic destruction. The destruction is going to continue. They need to preach to the Native Americans so the Native Americans can rise up and Zion can be built, and then Jesus can, you know, return, which will then inaugurate the millennium or the official Zion. Well, Cadman comes up with a different idea. He basically says, no, Zion is supposed to come first, and it's this long era of peace that's going to be in the flesh. And then after Zion, there's going to be another chaotic destruction. And then that's when Jesus comes down and there's Armageddon. And then we have the millennium. So Zion and the millennium are two peaceful onsets. Zion is in the flesh, millennium's in the spirit, where Bickerton believes the millennium is like kind of both. So he's starting to disagree with Bickerton, you see, early on. He's actually writing this in the West Elizabeth newspaper, his ideas. So pretty interesting that the president of the 12 is contradicting Bickerton. But then when he goes out to Kansas and hears about this adultery allegation, he agrees with William Bickerton's detractors. So the conference that was supposed to be this great celebration is actually split into two, where you have a conference that's constantly trying to show that William Bickerton's an adulterer, and you have the Bickerton conference that are trying to kind of reach to the Native Americans and trying to carry on the business of the church. And Bickerton was pretty progressive when he talked about with women. Bickerton, this was not the first time, believe it or not, that he got in trouble talking with women privately. This actually happened in Pennsylvania. He was walking in the park with the sister. It was a deaconess, and it was, her name was Frances Hunt, and they went together in Allegheny Park, and some people saw them in a public place privately. And William Bickerton was married at the time. So he had to go before a council meeting a few years earlier, and they basically were like, all right, nothing happened. But then again, you see the same thing happening where Bickerton's having a friendship. And it could have been adultery, right? It's very possible that it could have been. But the problem with that is William Cadman, you basically have the Bickertonite group that is supporting Bickerton. The people that are the detractors of Bickerton are excommunicating everybody from the Bickertonite group because they're saying, well, if you support Bickerton, you're an apostate. And then William Cadman actually holds an ad hoc court within the community to prove that William Bickerton was an adulterer. He really believed the evidence. He acts as prosecutor for 8 hours calling witnesses from the community, and the jury is made up of all non-Bickertonites, and he purposely did that to prove to the community once and for all. Because if he could get the community as a whole on his side, then he knows that the church can then continue forward and William Cadman will be the leader. He will be the leader because he's the president of the 12. And what ends up happening is William Cadman does not get the verdict that he wants. They basically say, okay, the verdict is, we believe that William Bickerton did not have any criminal intimacy with Tryphena, but we do believe that he acted unbecoming of somebody of his stature within the community, which basically means is what William Bickerton got in trouble from the beginning, even when he was with Frances Hunt in Allegheny. In Victorian America, a woman that was married could not be, you know, talking privately with another married man. That was considered very taboo. And William Bickerton did not follow that social etiquette. He shows time and again that he does not do that. And, I mean, William Bickerton was in his 60s. He had one eye. I mean, he had lost his eye, you know, in Kansas. And here's this beautiful woman in her late 20s. It looks weird, first of all. And it kind of shows that this could have been scandalous, but Tryphena and William Bickerton are saying, no, there's no adultery. So what ends up happening is James Taylor eventually, the church splits in two. William Cadman does not get the verdict that he wants. He does not get the community on his side. And William Bickerton, for most parts, he's acquitted of his accusation of adultery. But William Cadman goes to the East, convinces most of the people in the East that William Bickerton is an adulterer. Most of the people in the West think William Bickerton's innocent, and the Church of Jesus Christ literally splits in two. William Cadman becomes the new leader of the Church of Jesus Christ in the East. William Bickerton remains the leader of the church in the West. And what's really interesting is Tryphena Taylor becomes a member of Bickerton's church, and James Taylor is a member of Cadman's church. And they still remain married for part of the time.
Wow.
So this is what it is hot, sensational, scandalous news in the newspapers, all of this going on in St. John. What's really interesting is Tryphena Taylor eventually divorces her husband because he ran her name through the mud. James Taylor was like, my wife is an adulterer. She's, you know... In Victorian America, a woman's reputation was everything. It meant everything to them. So that you take away that prized possession, a woman doesn't really have rights. They can't vote, right? I mean, they're a second-class citizen. So that if your reputation's gone, everything's to shambles. But during this time in the 1870s and 1880s, within America as a whole, you start to see women really starting to take a leadership role to be able to divorce their husbands, which in a Victorian America was still taboo, but it was starting to grow. But within a little town, conservative town like St. John, you better believe a woman, a young woman divorcing her husband over the accusation that she's an adulterer is hot soap opera news. And it's all in the presses. And what's interesting is the courts eventually agree with Tryphena. They actually say, they actually take custody of the children away from James, which is a huge slap in the face to James because a man is supposed to be the leader of the family, right, in Victorian America. The fact that the courts take the children away from him really shows that the courts really did agree with her. But it wasn't a full win for Tryphena either because the custody of her children went to her brother. And that's probably because a woman in Victorian America, they don't really make a lot of money. And if they do have a job, they're always paid less than men most of the time. So they give custody to the brother, hoping that the children will be taken care of and she has kind of rights as a mother. So it's not a full win for her either. Mm. And what's really interesting is the Bickertonite church under William Bickerton actually and eventually excommunicate Tryphena. You might say, why do they excommunicate Tryphena? Well, because Tryphena was seen around riding along with her attorney. And there was an accusation that she was having an affair with her attorney. And this was before she got divorced. So the Bickertonite church, actually, they bring her into a council meeting. And Bickerton is, and several of the other men are trying to say, and Tryphena was a deaconess, so she's a member of the ministry. And they're telling her, Tryphena, you can't be driving around with this man. Now, William Bickerton, you know, would walk and talk with women privately about certain things. That didn't really seem to be a problem. So there really was an issue where they really thought she was having an affair with this man. And it really seems to be that that was the case, because when they say, Tryphena, you're doing something wrong, she says, no, I'm not. And I'm not going to stop hanging out with her attorneys was Hadlock. So there was something going on, it seems like. And she was saying no. And you could see why her husband ran her name through the mud. And she's looking to divorce her husband. And she's having some type of intimate relationship with this attorney that's helping her divorce her husband. So the Bickertonite church is like, no, you have to stop. They're like, you see the minutes. They're pleading her, just repent and we'll keep you in the church. That was the deal. And she says no, and she leaves. So you could see that she had a way out and she didn't take it. And that's when she divorces her husband and it blows up. So not to mention the church, not only does the church split in two, but William Bickerton's life is in shambles, because his wife, who didn't want to live in Kansas at that time, she eventually becomes disassociated from the church. We don't know the reasons why when she was in the East. It could have been because how her husband was treated. We can only speculate. But eventually Bickerton tries to bring his wife back to Kansas because he misses her. And she just says, I can't take the heat. I can't take the sand and the wind. I miss Pennsylvania. So they're a married couple that's separated. When this whole adultery scandal blows up, you see William Bickerton, it seems like his wife had heard about it. And eventually William Bickerton actually initiates divorce against his wife. And he says that he did it to save his assets, because he was afraid that she would, because she was disassociated from the church, that she would start taking church property that was technically could have been under his name. So he ends up divorcing her. So you see the adultery scandal gets in the middle of that too, and William Bickerton ends up divorcing his wife. It's not a good call on William Bickerton. I actually make a judgment call in the book, which I usually try not to, but I actually say this was a rash thing that really would have made Bickerton worse. And it did. It did not look good. And a lot of people were like, this is not a good situation. So the whole mission to the Native Americans from the 1870s onward is stalled in 1880 because of this huge blow-up within the Bickertonite church.
Wow.
A super long story, but you have to tell the whole story because it's a major soap opera. It's constant back and forth.
Wow. And so William Cadman takes over one half of the church, and Bickerton tries to keep the other half of the church. Was it a pretty even split then?
Pretty much. Yeah, there was a large cohort of people in the East and a little cohort of people in the West that sided with Cadman, and most of the people of the West and a little cohort in the East sided with Bickerton. So it almost seemed like it really was an even split.
Hmm.
We don't know exact numbers, but it looked like it was pretty even keel.
Wow.
And that's going to last for 22 years. The Church of Jesus Christ is split in two.
1880 is when it splits. Oh, and I was going to ask you that, because if I remember right, at the beginning they went by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yep.
And then they chopped off the Latter-day Saints.
Yep. In 1870, they always interchange them. In the minutes, they're always calling themselves the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And occasionally they'll say the Church of Jesus Christ. In 1877, William Bickerton incorporates the church again. They first incorporated the church in 1865 legally in Pennsylvania. William Bickerton then incorporates, and I don't know, I couldn't find the incorporation papers, but you could suspect it seemed like it was the Church of Jesus Christ when they incorporated it. But then he reincorporates the church again in 1877, and for sure they're calling it the Church of Jesus Christ. But in the minutes, they still call it the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints with no hyphen. They're interchangeable. So he's not afraid to call themselves Latter-day Saints. Interesting note, most Bickertonites don't even know that. The biggest thing within the Bickertonite movement, especially me growing up in it, was like, we're not Latter-day Saints. But yet we have one of our songs in the Saint Symbol, oh, it's good to be a saint of Latter-day. And they sing it. But we're like, we're not the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We don't believe that. But that was the name of the church. It was used interchangeably all throughout Bickerton's life.
And didn't he refer to himself as a Mormon? Because you guys don't call yourselves Mormons now.
Yeah. people called Bickerton Mormon and his movement Mormon, but eventually Bickerton just, from the very get-go, once he breaks away from Brigham Young, he's like, we're not Mormons. He's always quick to say that. But some people in the movement, and you, when you read the newspaper accounts, they're always called those Mormons, or they're not the Brighamite Mormons, or those Mormons of Utah. They're the other Mormons. But Bickerton hated that. He actually said in the Kansas newspapers, he's like, we're not Mormons, we're Stafford County Saints. He liked to call himself his Saints.
Oh, wow.
So
even though they're not Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, right. But see, Bickerton was okay calling them Latter-day Saints. That was okay, too, because they used that in the minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's the terminology. He just did not want to be associated with Brigham Young. Because Bickerton despised Brigham Young to the core. Even to the very day he died, he despised Brigham Young and did not like him because of polygamy. There's this real strong, you always see it all throughout his writings, ever since that polygamy announcement comes out. He doesn't even admit. Let me give you this example. William Bickerton, after he breaks away from Brigham Young, in his official writings of the church, he never even admits that he was a member of Brigham Young's church. Like, he starts with Sidney Rigdon's church and then says, oh, well, Sidney Rigdon fell away and, you know, we started our own church. It's like, well, wait a minute. What about those 10 months that you were with Brigham Young? He only leaves one little hint in one of the writings. He says, in the Salt Lake Mormon, it was in the Ensign of 1863, he says, and the Salt Lake Mormon stood in the way. That's all he says when he starts his movement. That's his little nod or hint to say, yeah, I was a member of the Brighamite Church. But he never actually admits that. It really goes to show the repugnance he had. He wanted to be disassociated from them as much as possible. And in that strong prejudice towards Brigham Young in a lot of the Bickertonites still follows to today. I don't necessarily have that because, you know, I'm a historian. I can look at it and go, okay, you know, William Bickerton, I see some of the reasons.
So there's still a little bit of animosity towards
Them. Yeah. I'm okay being called the Bickertonites are part of the Mormon movement. Totally fine with that because that's true from a historical standpoint. But most Bickertonites, you say you're part of the Mormon movement, they're like, we're not Mormons. Like, what are you talking about? It's kind of like a slap in the face to them, which to me I think is so silly, but most Bickertonites, I will say, I'm going to maybe make a blanket stereotype, but from my experience, most Bickertonites, you say that, I've been told by several people, Daniel, don't say we're part of the Mormon movement because we're not. We are not Mormons. And I'm like, we are part of the Mormon movement. We are part of the Latter-day Saint movement. We need to embrace it. Like, it's okay. It's totally okay.
Wow, that's interesting. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Daniel Stone. In our next conversation, we'll find out that LDS missionaries actually targeted Bickerton's followers. Were they successful? Here's what Dr. Daniel Stone has to say.
It goes all the way up to John Taylor. John Taylor hears about the Bickertonites and hears about how they're split and basically sends missionaries. And down the line, they send missionaries to St. John and to Pennsylvania to convert the Bickertonites. And they're very successful at doing that, I want to mind you. They convert a lot of Bickertonites.
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.